Season 6, Episode 6, Danny Boy. It has one of the longest intros I can remember, so it's going to be a while before you hear the theme song. Russell's making coffee in the break room, and Medavoy comes in and is all awkward because it's Russell's first day back. He says, welcome back. He offers to make the coffee, and then when it gets too awkward, he leaves. And Jill Kirkendall is there to be the reassuring hand on the shoulder when Russell's like, I did that, and I made the coffee. And Jill says, but it's good to start somewhere, or you've got to start somewhere.
Which, real quick, shouldn't it have been harder for her to make tea than coffee?
Yeah, because her, as we all know, if you're following along, her husband, Bobby Simone, has died of infection, heart disease, and wanting to go to the West Wing. So it's still pretty rough on her. Sipowicz comes through the doors downstairs, goes to the desk sergeant for messages, and then we meet a new character, Ricky Schroeder, which I feel like I should just say it now, and I know that it's not going to matter. Regardless of what Ricky Schroeder is doing in real life, his character Danny Sorensen and him are separate people. However, seeing his face is going to be difficult, knowing that he put money towards Kyle Rittenhouse's bail fund, I think, or his lawyer fund. He paid money for a guy who shot a bunch of people and doesn't believe in consequences for that. Fantastic. He's an asshole. So, Ricky Schroeder shows up, and he sees Andy at the desk, and he says, hey, where's the squad? And he's like, what do you need? And he's like, well, I'm assigned up there. And Andy coolly says, oh, I'm assigned up there too, even though Andy must know this is his new partner, based on how shit works. Sibwood's like, I'll show you where it is. And then as he's walking up, he makes a crack saying, so that's what 14-year-olds are wearing now. And Danny says, yeah, me and all my pals. They do what I like to call name-only intros, where they don't say, hi, I'm so-and-so. They just go, Andy Sipowicz. And he's like, Danny Sorensen, how are you, Andy? And then Sipowicz like, the boss is Arthur Fancy. The second Danny gets into the room, after he gets introduced to Dolores, everybody's looking at him. Everybody's giving him side-eye. Everybody's looking at this dude. And
he's replacing the great Bobby Simone.
Yeah, we get it. But, like, imagine
it's
if it's...
Like, when, like, do you remember the shooting guard that came in after Michael Jordan?
No, I don't. I don't remember that shooting guard.
Yeah, like one exactly.
Well, he gets pointed to Arthur Fancy's office, and he goes in, and Fancy's immediately, like, shut the door. And he goes, hey, so you're replacing a guy. He goes, yes, Bobby Simone. And then Fancy's like, so do you know him? And he goes, no, I do not. And then
That's weird, because in my cut, Fancy said, you're replacing a god.
That's just the subtext, Kyle. He didn't actually say that. Oh,
that was weird.
I did want to mention that that Fancy's like, yeah, he was married to someone in the squad, Diane Russell. And all Danny says is, really, is... he was married to somebody in the squad? Is that allowed? And then Fancy is like, what, you got a problem with that? You got a fucking problem?
Danny learned real quick he asked the wrong question.
and he responds like, no, I just thought the job had a problem with something like that. He's like, yeah, there was no official...
Rightfully so. we've learned.
We're going to find out in this episode why they do that.
Yeah, rightfully so. We knew before this episode. When Bobby and Diane had their little spats and shit.
Yeah.
I knew before that.
He says, okay. He's like, yeah, Diane's a little raw, to be honest. Well, he says, Diane's a little raw. And he's like, okay. He's like, who's...
Ew, I don't want him talking about Diane like that.
Gross. He says, who is his partner? And he goes, Andy Sipowicz. He's like, yeah, I met him. And Fancy's like, he's pretty raw, too. I guess we all are. Then Fancy gets a call while Danny starts checking out all the looks he's getting from everybody.
I don't know, Kirk. Were the Jews raw when Jesus died? You know what I mean?
Wow.
That's what it was like. That's what it was like losing Bobby, bro.
Oh, God. Okay.
You can't take that out of context. Fucking spoiler alert to this episode, there's a whole scene where, like, Metavoy and Martinez are, like, pontificating over Bobby's memory. It's like a whole jerk-off session.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. I can't wait to get to the jokes.
He's no Bobby Simone, though, you know? Like, he's no Bobby Simone.
Fantastic impression. You sound like a genuine...
Who was that, though? Hey, who was that? Martinez or Metavoy?
I thought you were doing an impression... I thought you were doing an impression of the scum that's in the bathroom of that precinct that has a voice. What's really weird is Fancy gets a call, and the only thing you hear is, "So not likely to die," and I was like, is that them giving, like, a little subliminal message about Danny Sorensen? It's like, this guy isn't going to die right away, so don't hate him too much. He gets off the phone, he asks Danny, "Oh, so do you want to catch right away?" And he's like, "Definitely." He's like, "Okay." And he walks out, and when he walks out, there's an empty desk, and I wanted to talk about this. There's an empty desk, and Danny goes, "So this desk, boss?" And then there's just this silence where Diane, like, looks at the desk like, "You motherfucker." And I kind of wanted someone to be like, "What are we going to do? Rope off this desk? Are we going to treat it like the Shroud of Torin? What are you doing?"
Also, where else is he going to fucking sit?
He gets to sit in the poke room, apparently, because we can't give
him
desk.
Spoiler alert, later on, he asks, like, where he can get a locker. Diane flips a bitch on him. It's like, well, where's he gonna put his stuff?
It's his first
day. I'm sorry that your dude died, but this guy's gotta do his work.
He works here now.
This guy's gotta do his work. He just wants to work. He has no emotional connection to Bobby, and that sucks. That's great. That's a bummer. He feels for you, but, like, the dude's just trying to do his job.
It's his first day. It's his first day. That's the thing I want to just remind everybody. It's this dude's first day, and this is what he has to deal with. Fancy says, "Yeah, that's your desk," and he introduces everybody. He meets Metavoy and Martinez and Jill. And then it seems like Diane's not going to say anything, which is awkward as fuck. And then when she does, Danny offers condolences, and she just gives looks. And then Fancy gives the case.
She was such a dick.
The, like, whole time.
Because I really think he was trying to... I think, like, okay, like, if we're basing our assumptions off of what this show has built this far, we assume that this is, like, the premier, like, detective squad.
Yeah.
Like, they're the best.
They're the Avengers of...
Other squads can't compare. Mm-hmm. Also, everyone knows their business... everyone knows everything about this squad. So we should assume that people know about Bobby Simone dying. I mean, for fuck's sake, they probably, like, put it in the, like, the police newsletter.
Yeah.
So he probably knows about it. He probably is just trying to be nice to Diane, and she is a total dick about it. Like, the face she gives and shit, yeah.
What's great is Fancy then gives Sorensen the case, which is not a murder. It's a shooting. But nobody's dead. It's just a drive-by.
We still haven't gotten to the opening thing yet?
No, it hasn't happened yet.
Oh my god.
So
we get all the way to the drive-by?
We get to right before the drive-by. We're almost there.
That's right.
He gives Sorensen the case. He writes Sorensen's name on the board, and it looks like Diane's going to break down when it's like, what the fuck did you expect? You shouldn't be here right now. You should be mourning still if this is a problem.
You should be transferred.
you should be transferred
to a different department, a different precinct.
Now.
Where everything's not going to remind you of Big Shot and Bob. You just got to go. I'm sorry, girl, but you got to go.
You got to go.
Bye, girl, bye.
But gosh, there's a whole nother scene after this. So it's so crazy how long this whole intro is. So as he's writing it down, Sorensen sees that there's two frogs on Andy's desk and goes, "You a frog guy, Andy?" And Andy's like, "I got two frogs on my desk. If that makes me a frog guy, I don't know." But it's like, why do you have two frogs on your desk?
Yeah. Why? And you're super protective about them.
Like, I remember. And then it reminded me, like, he was given a latex frog or a rubber frog. And he just threw that frog away. These are two different frogs. I don't know. I was just so confused. Like, why does he have frogs?
I don't know why he got upset about that. But that's like if someone went to our dad and was like, "Oh, you're a Laker fan?" And him being like, "Oh, I got a t-shirt and a hat. You must be a fucking Laker fan." And just walks away.
Because I know this about his office. On the inside of the door, he has the Lebowski Achiever mirror, the Time magazine. Are you a Lebowski Achiever?
Okay.
And he says that like 90% of the people don't know what that is, but they look at the mirror and then they leave. It'd be like if someone was like, "Oh, so you're a fan of the Big Lebowski?" And he's like, "Well, I just bought this very specific thing from the movie." You're like, I guess that makes me a fan of the movie. I mean, well, I don't know. But it's like, yeah, obviously, they're just making conversation, dude. It's weird you have two frogs on your desk. Sipwitz and
him. That's also weird, being that you're like this big gruff asshole and you like are into frogs and fish.
As Sipwitz and him walk down the stairs, Sipwitz basically tries to tell him the same thing Fancy told him, and Sorensen just responds with the information he knows. Like, it's Diane Russell, she's married to Bobby, she was married to Bobby, and Sipwitz is like, "Well, are you going to interrupt me because you know everything?" And he's like, "No, I'm just letting you know what I know." And then as he leaves, Sipwitz just breaks it down. It's like, he died, they were married, it's her first day back, take that into consideration. And he opens the door and they walk out of the precinct, or they walk out of the house. And Danny kind of blows air through his cheeks. He gives kind of like that. And I'm like, yep, that's what you're dealing with this whole episode, buddy. So you better strap in. It's going to be shitty.
That's day one, bro.
Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. All right, so the next scene is, because it's technically Sorensen's case. He's taking lead, and Sipwitz is his partner. And I think Sipwitz was kind of hanging back to see his style, to see how he's going to roll.
He's letting him get his sea legs.
Seeing his style, seeing his approach. When they get there to the area where the drive-by was, Sipwitz asks, "Oh, you did a lot of narcotics busts while you were here in the area," because Danny is coming from narcotics. And he says, "Yeah, a couple." And he walks up to a uniform, and the uniform congratulates Danny on his promotion, getting the gold shield, and says the victim is a guy named Julio. He got shot in a drive-by, and that's all he knows. It was a single driver. And Danny's like, "That's it." And he's like, "That's all he's telling me." Danny goes to talk to him and gets nothing. Then he seems to shake down some random dude.
Well, he sees him. When he's talking to the guy, out of the corner of his eye, he catches him. And you see that he hones in on this guy, and he quickens his questions with the guy who's shot, and he ends the conversation pretty quickly and abruptly, too.
Yeah, kind of like, "Well, you're hurt, so maybe you don't remember. Anyway, be right back." And he walks up to this dude and starts shaking him down, for seemingly no reason. And it turns out, Sipwitz grabs his wallet, gets the guy's name. It's like, his street name's Flacco, but he has a three-part name. And then after Danny kind of gets him on the car and kind of spreads him out, the guy starts talking. He's like, "Danny, this was drug-related, man." He's like, "Okay, what happens?" Like, three guys pull up, shoot at this guy. His boys get into a car and chase after him. The guy gives him a partial plate on the drive-by car, and he didn't get a plate at all on the second car, but gives descriptions, gives the amount of people. And then Danny finishes up the fake shakedown. And a pretty funny part is when he tells Sipwitz, he's like, "Give that guy his wallet, Sipwitz." And he goes, "Yes, sir." And he gives him the wallet, and the guy's like, "Hey, could you congratulate him? Tell him I congratulate him on his promotion?" And Sipwitz is like, "Yeah, I'll get right on that." Which is just... It's just so funny.
It's a pretty funny interaction. Yeah, because it's pretty funny to watch Sipwitz reacting. Because in the beginning, he's like, he doesn't understand what Danny's doing, and like he's like shaking this guy down for no reason. And then when the guy starts just like spilling with information, Sipwitz is like kind of caught off guard. So it's like actually really interesting to watch.
And then Danny goes back to the guy, and he says, "So do you have no friends?" And he's like, "Yeah, I've got friends." He's like, "So you mean to tell me nobody gave chase after these guys came and shot you?" Which is cool, because what Danny did was let the guy know, "I know that your story's bullshit. You said one guy showed up. I know it was three now. Because I've got, somebody told me," he assumes probably the cop. But he's like, "Yeah, somebody let me know that your story's bullshit." He's like, I want you to give me the name of five of your running buddies, and when you come back from the hospital, we're going to talk about those names and make sure that they match up." And the guy's like, "Okay." And he calls him Pepe at one point, which I don't know if that was an insult or just because.
I think so. I think because he is a Hispanic dude.
Because I don't know if that's an insult to, like, white people or just cops or I don't know. But because Pepe is a name, so I didn't understand.
Wait, didn't Danny call him Pepe?
No, the guy called Danny Pepe. I thought he said...
I don't know. Some people call... I hear, like, some people have called me Papa before.
Well, that's just because, like, you exude dad energy.
No. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's hard to explain. Like, I've seen them do it towards other people as, like, a term of endearment in a way, or, like, it's like a slang term for something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why, I don't know. Maybe Pepe means something, I don't know.
Because what I thought the dude said after Danny was like, "So you're going to go to the hospital, you're going to come back, you're going to give me a list of names that are your running buddies, and if it's not correct, we're going to have problems." And the guy said, "Yeah, Pepe," but for the first time I watched the episode, I saw he said, "Yeah, bet." Which is kind of like a thing people say now, like, "Yeah, bet on that." But then when I saw it again and saw the closed captioning, it said Pepe, and I re-listened to it, like, "Oh, he did say Pepe. Why did he say that?" But anyway.
Yeah, no way it was bet. Too early.
Way too early.
These guys are too white, there's no way they thought of bet.
The uniform officer grabs Danny again and says, "By the way, there's a double homicide under the FDR. And Andy just steps in with, "Those will be our shooters," and then walks away. Just in the middle of their conversation. The next scene, we see the entire squad show up to the DOA, the double homicide. Why? Why isn't it just Diane and Jill?
Yeah. Even fancy.
Even fancy. The whole crew shows up to a double homicide, which I don't know why.
Yeah.
Probably
fancy there.
Just for the drama.
What, but like the thing is like, what drama?
Oh, just to have that point where Fancy asks them how they want to handle whose case it is. Because technically it would be his call.
You could have had that back at the house.
Yeah, it was weird to have the entire thing. And then it's kind of like, are you doing it just because, like, it's Diane's first day back? And they're like, "Well, let's go support her." And be like, then she shouldn't be there. If she can't do her job effectively by herself, then she probably shouldn't be at work.
Oh, 100%. Like, if you have to change protocol for somebody, like, if you wouldn't normally do that, then she shouldn't be there.
Diane mentions that she can't find ID on them. They talk about how it was clear that somebody really wanted these guys dead. There's a ton of bullet holes. Medavoy mentions that there's a trail from the car of blood. A blood trail, so there's probably a third person. Fancy got the call on the cell phone when there was only one in the squad. He got a call that Danny and Sipowitz were on their way because the car matches a partial plate that they got at their crime scene. And after he says that, Diane's like, "Well, what does that mean? Is this his case now?" And he's like, "We'll talk about that when he gets here."
Like a fucking crackhead. She freaks out.
You know, like when crackheads are wondering about their homicide cases. But Sipowitz and Danny show up, and Sipowitz is like, "Hey, so, technically, this is your part of your case, but don't get too chesty about that because Diane would be catching next." And he goes, "Okay, I got it. I know what you're saying." Danny shows up, and he's like, "What do we got?" And they tell him what happened about the double homicide, the only thing they know. Martinez shows back up and is like, "Oh, the plates are registered to Leonard Lohman." And Sipowitz is like, "Lenny Lohman, I know that guy. He's a shitty low-life bartender." Then there's the moment where I think Fancy brings it up, where he's like, okay, so you guys are going to go with that? And then Russell looks at Danny, and then he's like, that's okay, if that's what we want to do. And then Russell's like, sure. Like, one of those classic, like, I'm not happy with the situation, but whatever. I'm just going
to
be passive.
I'm going to agree to it. But I'm going to agree to it, so then later on I can tell you I wasn't happy about it.
And it was, I just wrote down, no one is making him take, like, no one is making Russell give it to him. She just says, okay. Clearly Russell's not happy, and then Danny's like, so are we going to go talk to this guy, Andy? And he goes, let's. And so Andy's clearly not happy. Medavoy volunteers himself and Martinez to go canvas.
And then Kirkendall and Russell go say that they'll wait for crime scene.
But what's important to note is Sipowicz and Danny are walking away, and Danny's like, well, how far is this guy? And he goes, about 8 blocks. And while we're on our way, we'll discuss our definitions of chesty.
Yeah.
It cuts back to Diane, and Diane says maybe Danny will get a promotion at the end of his first shift. And then Fancy goes, I found an ID on one of these guys. Which means her boss found an ID when she couldn't at the crime scene.
Yeah.
So, Whoa. So she literally goes, yeah.
Whoa, I never thought about that.
So literally her boss is there when he shouldn't. She gets all butt hurt that this guy's going to take care of the case. Then when she makes a passive-aggressive point, like, oh, well, maybe he's just, you know, going to take on the world by himself. Her boss looks over her work and goes, by the way, you fucked up. I'm going to say this a couple more times before this episode's over. At that point, Fancy should have told her to go home.
That's crazy. Like, in the that's weird.
Because, it was written that way because at the beginning of the scene, they point out that she can't find ID. There was no need to write that line in there, really. And then, at the end of the scene, Fancy goes, by the way, here's some ID.
Wow.
So it's, you know, that part right there is like, that's when you tell her you gotta go home. Clearly you're distracted. I don't want to do this to you, but I know it's hard. It's gotta be hard, but even harder for the situation. Just go home. It's fine. No one thinks any less of you. Also, she made that point like, oh, maybe he'll get a promotion within his first shift. It's like, you guys catch perpetrators all the time. That would be his job. He's not doing anything special. He's just doing his job. And it's his first fucking day.
Yeah, and no one is taking into account, like, how hard this must be for him.
He doesn't know exactly what he's doing yet.
Like, and that, not only that, like, he, like, we've discussed it, he knows the gravity of the whole situation.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's not a dummy. He's obviously a detective for a reason. He can, like, read rooms, read people. It's just, like, such a bummer. It's got to be such, like, a hard first day for that dude.
It's the hardest first day. The next scene, Danny and Sipowicz are getting coffee, and Danny just, as they're going back to the car, Danny's like, so are we going to have that chesty conversation anytime soon? And Sipowicz is like, I'm choosing my words. And he goes, yeah, obviously. And they have a little bit of a conversation. And he's like, can we figure this out before we have to talk to the guy who owns the murder car? And he says, no, I'm detecting a smart-ass tone. He's like, no, I'm not being a smart-ass, man. But I'm not going to examine all my words before I talk to people. And he says, I told you to take her feelings into account. And he's like, I did. She seems like she's back too soon. That's why I took it from her.
All valid points.
And then Sipowicz is like, that's not impossible. And he's like, I might be wrong. He's like, no, it's not impossible. And then he says, and then fucking Danny is like, also, I don't think it's different in narcotics. Partners are supposed to trust each other. You're supposed to trust that I know what I'm doing. And Sipowicz says, that'll develop in time.
I think that answer from Sipowicz is fine. Like, he doesn't know Danny yet. Danny has to earn that trust. But at the same time, like, Sipowicz also, like, he and I think with a different view than he would anyone else, you know?
Well, yeah, it's also, it's, we'll talk about it at the end.
If Kirkendall was acting like this to his new partner, I feel like he would step up and say something.
Oh, absolutely.
Or if, like, Metavoy was having a day like that, he would step up and say something to her, and like, or to him, and be like, hey, Metavoy, shut the fuck up.
Like, I feel like Fancy would. I feel like other people would. They'd be like, hey, you don't need to be this hard on this guy. It's his first day.
You know, they broke the rules, and they were fucking married when they weren't supposed to be.
And everybody was complicit in that, too.
Yeah. Oh,
after that little conversation, after that conversation, he's like, by the way, this bartender is shifty. He'll try to give you some information. They mention that this bartender's devious, shit like that. And then a biker shows up on the sidewalk and almost hits a woman, and then Sorensen just fucks with that guy. Says, get in the street, and he's like, okay, I will. And he's like, you swear to God? And then, like, gets him on the street, and Sipowicz is like...
That was a pretty good impression, Kirk.
And Sipowicz is like, is there any other quality of life crimes you want to address? And he goes, no. When they get to Lenny's bar, you can see in the transition where there's no audible dialogue that they're kind of arguing outside the car, which I thought was a nice touch. Like, they're kind of debating or arguing back and forth. When they get into the bar, Lenny is played by Ralph P. Martin, who was in an earlier episode of NYPD Blue as Stimpy, or Stimp, Stimpy or Stimp something.
Yeah. I couldn't place him.
I thought for half a second that maybe he was the same character, because I know that story had the story he was in had a bartender in it, I think, but it turns out they're different. Yeah. They're different characters, so. Apparently, he's also in Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, as Mr. Brown. Don't know what he does, but he's in it.
Poops.
Yeah, I guess so. He has real bad diarrhea. He takes a crack at Danny's age, the thing that Sipowicz did, says, I got this. You're going to have him buy a beer and then bust me for serving underage. When they bring up the fact that his car was in a drive-by and a murder... He asks if his car is damaged, which is how I would respond after people were murdered in my car. He then says, well, this is... You can chalk this up to the Don't Let Your Friends Drive Drunk campaign, because I leave my keys in the wheel well, because if I ever get half a load on, people don't want me driving. Because, you know, just to protect other people and yourself. Crazy idea. It's pretty clear he's acting like he has no idea what's going on. He doesn't know who Julio is. He does give a little bit of information when they show the pictures of the DOAs. He's like, oh, that's Frankie Pascal and his cousin Dominic.
I was saying, it's Julio down by the schoolyard.
Oh, Jesus. He's like, I don't know who...
The amount that they said Julio in a scene, I was like, I wanted to blow my brains out.
They do say Julio quite a bit. It was starting to sound like Weird Al's parody of Studio. Julio. Anyway.
I did not know he had that. Oh my god.
You're welcome.
It also annoyed me that the title of this episode wasn't Julio Down by the Schoolyard.
Anyway.
Okay, I'm going to have to go listen to Weird Al's Julio.
That's not a real song, but I want it to be now.
Oh my god. Can you tweet that to him, please?
Can you do Susu Studio as Julio?
A taco stand salesman?
Oh my god, that's so stupid. I don't think he's ever done a Phil Collins one. He may never have gotten permission. Lenny says that there is a Puerto Rican element showing up around the neighborhood. Which was, you know, and he said that kind of leaning into Sorensen, like, hey, you racist, right? Hey, you a little racist.
We all the same amount of racists here, right?
We're all a little racist in this room. And he's like, oh, was this about drugs, Lenny? And he's like, oh, that's a scourge, Andy. I don't know about that. That's not involved in my place. He's like, so what you're saying is you don't know if there was. You don't know if these Pascals were involved in drugs. Then as they're leaving, Lenny slips Danny a card. In one of those handshake slips. That's just so cool. And he then says about Sipowicz, you're working with one of the best there.
Just the coolest.
He is. He's just the coolest. And he says, Sipowicz, that, you know, you're working with one of the best there. And Sipowicz responds with, well, now you went and made my day. When they get back to the house, Sipowicz is like, hey, what are your impressions on Lenny Lohman? And Danny's like, oh, I'm allowed?
Fair enough.
And Sipowicz is like, don't be glib. And he's like, he wasn't the go-to guy, maybe a supplier or this. And through that conversation, Andy finds out that he was in the Army, which Andy is 100% cool with, because he was in Vietnam.
They both were in infantry.
At this point, also, Danny uses his Sipowicz's comb, which I don't know why he keeps one. But Danny uses his comb to get a tack out of his shoe, which he then just throws into the corner of the hallway, which means it will, in theory, just get in someone else's shoe.
Oh, yeah, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
And then Danny, before he walks into the squad, is like, yeah, what do you think of this? And he hands Sipowicz the card, and Sipowicz, like, has a mini freak out. Since
a mini freak out is a polite way to put it.
It's a polite way to put it. Well, yeah, he's
yeah,
like...
He like grabs the kid and sit down right there. You sit down.
This is big. And he's like, Lenny wants you to come back to his bar later to get some information. And he will try to play you, thinking you're looking out for yourself. And he's like, oh, so he thinks I'm ambitious. And he's like, he will not tell you the whole story. He'll tell you just what you need to know to get you to push the rest to try and get a promotion for yourself or something. He's like, I told you this guy is devious. And he's like, okay. And then he's like, well, how do we play it? And he's like, we're going to tell everybody in that room because the squad gets everything. And he goes, okay. And then Sipowicz is like, you're okay with that? He's like, yeah, I'm cool with that. And then when they stand up, Sipowicz is like, now this is what helps build trust. This helps reassures people's qualms. And he goes, and Danny's like, cool, solid. And he's like, but my only question is, you wait till we get all the way down here, right before we get into the boss's door, and then you tell me. And Danny was like, I was trying to figure which would give the least offense. And then Sipowicz kind of like looks at him, and then Danny gives like a half-assed, like smart-ass grin. And I was like, yep. This is going to be the Danny energy. This is the Danny energy we're getting for this show.
This is the writing that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me a lot of like Deadwood too, especially like, you know, a lot of the words that Sipowicz used there were like kind of like older words, you know.
Yeah.
And the way Danny responds, like, it just reminds like this is why I like this show.
It's also what I also really liked about this scene, and what I like how it's set up. It's set up that Andy is teaching him, because this is a situation where Danny doesn't know what's going on. You know what I mean? Danny goes, he gave me his card, I don't understand what that's about, you do, what is this? And then Sipowicz breaks it down, explains it to him, and says, here's what he wants you to do, here's what he thinks you're gonna do, and here's what we do in this situation, are you cool with doing it this way? And he's like, yeah, that sounds good. Like, Danny's like, okay, this is how you guys do it, I'm once again, it's my first day, I now have a double homicide.
I'm learning. I'm never a squad, but not a detective squad, so I'm trying.
He is learning, and so he asks, like, what to do, and then Sipowicz is like, I'm going to teach you, I'm going to let you know. And then at the end of that, Sipowicz is, like, giving him a little Sipowicz-tude, and then Danny gives him the smart-ass response going, like, yeah, well, I'm also walking on eggshells while trying to learn how to do this job. That's why I didn't tell you. And then looks at him and gives him a smile like, yeah, it's kind of fucking hard for me today. So let's go in there and talk about it, I guess. And they go into Fancy's office, and Russell, oh my god, Russell's such a bitch right here. Russell hands him Julio's rap sheet. And he's like, oh, yes, Julio Diaz is the first victim. Cool, thank you very much. And she goes, yes, that was the first victim on your original case. And he's like, yeah, thanks.
Dripping with hatred.
Everyone starts to, like, leave, where they're like, yeah, I'm going to check BCI, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go do this. And then Sipowicz, because he's a cool bro, is like, he gets dynamic, because usually people sit down when he does it. So Sipwoods is like, yeah, so this Lenny guy's got nothing for us. And Fancy's like, he didn't give you anything? Yeah, I'll tell you what he gave us. He gave us this. And starts, like, jerking off, which is like, okay. Little much.
So he's coming in hot.
He's coming in hot with that jerk-off motion.
So hot. So hot, dude. It's unnecessary.
So, yeah, Sipwoods came in super hot, and then he's like, but then he tries to make a play for Danny. And he gives Danny his card. He's like, he thinks he might be able to give Danny some information. And then fucking Russell is like, huh, took that for a wild guess. He's like, he didn't take this from you. He didn't show up and was like, yeah, so this bitch is crying. How about I take her case? That's not what he did.
Not at all.
He was basically just saying, whatever we're going to do, let's do it. I don't know because I don't work here. Because, once again, it's his first fucking day. And then, after she makes that comment, Sipwoods, like, looks her dead in the eye, and he's like, he gave this to him without me looking, and he brought it to my attention afterwards. And then Danny speaks for himself. He's like, I think he can try to give me some lame information. And then everybody in the room starts explaining, like, yeah, he's gonna try and give you just enough to move forward, even though it's not all gonna be true. And as they're running that for him, Sipwoods sees Sylvia outside the office, and he tells Fancy, he's like, hey, Sylvia's here. And Fancy's like, cool, you can go talk to her. And when he leaves, I found it kind of important, Danny asks the other guys, like, well, what kind of names did you get off Canvas? Because he wants to know information on Julio Diaz before he goes to talk to him. When Sylvia and Sipwoods sit down to talk, she's like, I got another letter from Juan Suarez, a prosecution case that she worked a while ago, and he's reiterating his story about how he didn't actually shoot this drug dealer, and Sipwoods is being kind of dismissive and jokey about it, and she's like, I've always had reservations. He's like, yeah, I know, ever since we met, you've talked about it. And he's like, yeah, I mean, they'll tell you these stories all the time. And she's saying that in the letters, he said the drug dealer that actually shot this dude told him that his family would get $1,000 a month if he just took the fall for this murder. But now he thinks that he's being, like, he's got a hit out on him at his, or in his jail, and he thinks they're going back on the deal. And what she wants Sipwoods to do is to talk to the old detective on the case, a detective Bill Dornan. And Sipwoods responds with, the Black Sergeant? And she said, yeah, are you friendly with him? And he says, oh, yeah, yeah, we're going whitewater rafting as soon as our schedules coincide. And she keeps pressing him, like, well, can you ask him about if this other drug dealer came up? And he's like, no, I can't ask that. I can't imply that he didn't do his job. And he's like, well, can you ask about this? And he's like, I'm not going to ask if he didn't think he got the right guy. And then he sees that Sylvia's upset, and he's like, maybe I'll ask him if he thought the confession seemed too easy or rushed or coerced. Like, not coerced, but I'll ask him if he thought the confession was credible. And she thanks him a lot, then says, I gotta go pick up Theo at daycare. And he says another odd line. Now I'm gonna, well, you pick him up at daycare, I'll solidify relations with one of my fellow black officers. Weird?
Yeah, I thought that line was super weird.
It's like they were trying to microwave for the audience that Andy might have an issue with black people, but they did it in, like, the least graceful way possible. Because they're like, oh, let's have him mention that he's black about four times before he actually meets him. That'll do it.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. It was very, very weird.
I think it would have been taken care of with the previously on NYPD Blues, probably, where they show you a scene of him dealing with his racial issues. But, like, when it's just out of nowhere, it just seems very weird and odd.
Yeah, but, like, we know his racial issues, like...
Well, yeah, I'm talking about, because they're planning on, like, the audience that's watching it because of syndication, who have no idea because they didn't watch the episode before, or the episodes before. Danny comes out of the room and is told by Dolores, Julio is in the pokey room, so he checks with Sipwoods. And Sipwoods responds with, yeah, start without me. It's your first day.
Yeah.
It's your first day. Just start without me. And then Sipowicz says...
on a double murder.
And then Danny's like, okay, I guess. And then he goes, so where's the pokey room? I just started.
Some people don't even want me to have a desk.
She wanted to put my ass outside.
This bitch wants me to share the desk with the PAA.
I think if they took a vote, they would make Metavoy share a desk with them before putting him at Bobby's. They'd be like, hey, Metavoy, you get half a desk.
For sure. Hey, Metavoy Martinez, you're going to share, and he's going to get Metavoy's desk.
As Danny goes to take care of it on his own, Sipowicz kind of gives a look like, oh, I'm kind of liking this guy. I'm turning around on this guy because I told him to go do something and he's doing it himself. And I think Russell sees that he gives off that kind of look and then gives him a look. And there's no dialogue. It's just kind of like a, you traitorous bitch. He is not Bobby.
Yeah. It's a look off for sure.
The next scene is when Metavoy is just standing at a urinal and doing nothing and says he's doing nothing. And Martinez comes in and he's like, hey, Metavoy, what's up? And they're like, yeah, you know, just sitting here. And then Metavoy's like, so Sorensen, you know, he's in the pokey room right now. He's like, ah, cool. And then they start, and you mentioned it, they're comparing him to Simone, and they're basically like, yeah, well, he's no Simone. Like, Simone had a way bigger dick, and had way more muscles, and was more, he was likable, you know? He was cool.
Like, way cool.
Look, basically saying, like, I'm not gay, but if I was, I'd be going for that Simone date all day.
Tickle the ivories.
And then, like, it kind of ends with him like, well, there's no comparison. And, and Metavoy goes, I wonder what...
That shit got me.
There's no comparison. Well, the thing that got me is when Metavoy was like, well, he's no Bobby Simone. Bobby had this likable quality, and then he leans up against the wall in the bathroom like a girl talking about a dreamy boy.
About a dude she didn't get a chance to blow.
And it was like, Jesus, Metavoy, God, hide your boner. But then Metavoy...
Yeah, way he talks about Bobby, he basically tells Martinez, like, I would have rather been partners with him.
Oh, man. Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't want to stare into those eyes all day on patrol?
Metavoy is the one who brings up, like...
Real quick. When you work with Bobby, not only do you catch bad guys, but you also catch feelings. Am I wrong? Jill tried to climb that mountain. Abandono tried to climb that mountain. Russell climbed that mountain. And we're finding out that Greg Metavoy was going to climb that mountain.
Some crazy-ass lady.
John Irving has asked about that mountain.
Yeah, he did.
Dolores wanted that mountain.
Everybody wants the mountain.
He's the Everest. Everyone wants an excursion, baby.
And while they finish up their comparison, Metavoy was like, I wonder what kind of interview he runs. And Martinez is like, well, we can go watch. And Metavoy was like, yeah, if he's in the pokey room. And Martinez was like, you told me he was in the pokey room. It was almost like a, just say, let's go watch. Like, you don't need to dance around it. Like, if you want to go see, let's just watch it. Who cares?
Which, by the way, totally not cool to just watch him without his knowledge.
And but, it's his first one.
Yeah. Keep on keeping on, right?
Sorensen is just staring at this Julio guy. And the guy... and Julio gets upset almost immediately, saying, like, man, I don't understand this. I get shot. You bring me back here and you stare at me like an owl. And he's like, well, your names don't match up, Julio, so that's a problem. And he's like, no, those are my friends. He's like, no, I want the names of the guys that you had collars with, because they're the ones that chase down these dudes and kill them under the FDR. He's like, how would I know about the FDR if I was sitting in the street shot? And he's like, give me a bar. He's like, what? He's like, give me a bar you go to. And he's like, I'll give you a bar I don't... How about I give you the bars I don't go to? And then he grabs his shot arm. And he's like, I'm not getting anything from you. How about I get it from your friends? Give me the bars you go to. And eventually he gets the bar where Lenny Lohman works. And he's like, who's the bartender there? Kind of an odd question, if you were Julio. Like, why are you asking about the bartender in a random bar?
That is a very weird question.
And he's like, so he'll know you there? He's like, yeah, he'll know me, but he won't like me. I just use that place to piss. And he's like, okay, you're going to the poke. He's like, why? What did I do? And he's like, for not being cooperative, I'm going to look for wants all over this country. He's like, oh, Jesus. And he's like, this is the worst. He's like, yeah, I'm writing a Reader's Digest. And they leave, or Soares leaves, and Sipowicz is right behind him. And then Medavoy and Martinez kind of give like, we approve. We approve of this guy.
Totally did his job unethically and, you know, broke a bunch of rules. But we approved, dude. We're 100% and we are sold.
We are 100. Sorensen is with Lenny and goes into his place kind of after hours. And Lenny just speaks straight up and he's like, hey man, so I'm not a perfect guy. I help you with this, you help me with other stuff. And he's like, sure, why not? And he's like, yeah, so the Pascals were talking about taking out two Julios. He's got a friend named Julio. And since Danny knows that's half true, Danny just like drops the idea like, oh, I think you were involved. I think you know who they were going for, and I think you gave them your car. And Sipowicz walks in and asks for a ginger ale as Danny starts to get confrontational. Danny pulls him over the bar, which that's got to be demeaning when you're so fucking short they could just pull you over the bar and hold you there. Like, that felt kind of mean.
And your feet dangle.
Yeah, that felt mean. Because we're kind of tall, me and you, or you and I. We're not shorter people. And when I saw that, I felt bad because I was like, that sucks.
I thought it was a great scene.
And Danny, you know, is grilling him, saying like, I know you know who the third guy is. And he's like, how would I know who the third guy is? He's like, let me ask you this. What happens when I find this third guy and he puts you as the guy who organized everything and gave him the car because he has no leverage? I'm going to have to arrest you for acting in concert. So the guy's like, well, that assumes I know where he is. He's like, yeah, I think you do know where he is. Now put in an anonymous call. And then it's very weird because he's like, put in an anonymous call for the next detective who's catching, using specific language only the cops know.
100%. Yeah, he's basically setting it up for like Diane to get the tip.
Which is funny because he does it by going, here's all this cop lingo you need to remember and say word for word so that this person gets it.
Which in the end, like, spoiler, it still bites him in the ass.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what he does. Lenny goes, oh, if I do that, we'll be cool. And he's like, we're right. He's like, as snow on Christmas. Which I was like, that was a weird line.
Never heard that saying.
It's also weird because it's coming out of Ricky Schroeder, who has like an eternal 12-year-old face. So it's like, yeah, I bet you want an N64, don't you, Ricky?
What?
I don't know. The next scene, Jill and Kirkendall are coming out of an apartment. Like, they went to go find somebody and they weren't there. Turns out the guy was coming back home, and Sipowicz and Danny get out of sight and give him the tip, and this gentleman comes up the stairs, they throw him to the ground. He has a wound on, like, his neck. I guess he was shot in the neck, maybe?
I think it grazed him. I think that's what that's supposed to say. I think someone also mentioned that. Dude got grazed.
Jill and Kirkendall ask him, so how'd you get that? Or, like, first they ask for his name. He's like, Tommy Simfranco? Tommy?
He had a weird fucking name, dude. I didn't take the time, but he had a weird last name. It was a very Italian last name.
I wrote it, and then I rewrote over it without erasing, so it doesn't even look like a word.
At the end of it, it basically came down to, like, it was, like, Puerto Ricans versus Italians, right?
And yeah.
The drug thing. Yeah. Like West Side Story.
Yes, exactly like West Side Story, a movie I have 100% seen.
You've seen West Side Story?
No, I haven't seen it ever.
You haven't? Oh, okay, I put West Side Story on, and then, you know, it loads or whatever. Uh-huh. And then at the bottom, it showed that it was like 3 hours long, and then I immediately turned it off.
Okay, so we're talking about Tommy. So they get Tommy to the ground, they ask him, how are you hurt, Tommy? And he goes, it was not with the Pascals. fucking Diana's like, not with the Pascals. It's his too. And Sipowicz is like, not if he asks. He's like, yeah, it won't get light out when the sun comes up. Danny, who is down with Jill, who's actually restraining the guy, he's like, yeah, my ears are burning. And they get him up, and Danny's like, hey, you got him? And he's like, yeah, we got him, for now. And it was like, what the fuck? Jesus, like, can't you just be happy you got somebody off the street without fucking worrying about credit? God.
No, they were just being a total bitch.
Tommy, going up the stairs, is giving up everything, where he's like, oh, it was mistaken identity. He's like, you mean after you shot at that guy and then his boys came to shoot at you? He's like, look, I'm not saying it doesn't look bad. And I'm not saying I won't cooperate. So they go into interview three, and Dyad's like, when you're done talking to the boss, Tommy will be in interview three. And it was like, fucking Jesus, okay. Sipowicz is met with Detective, well, now he's Sergeant. Sergeant Bill Dornan, who's played by Richard Gant, who, this dude has been in a bunch of stuff. His known for is kind of all over the place, but what I know him mostly for is being the black cop in The Big Lebowski, who said, or the credence, when the white cop said, I wouldn't hold up much hope for the tape deck, and then the black cop goes, or the credence. Oh god, that's such a good movie, and he's funny in it, just staring at the dude's apartment, or...
He's also in Deadwood. He's a character actor.
He's in a ton of stuff.
Ton of stuff, yeah, he's really cool.
And Sipowicz is like, hey, you go talk to the boss. I gotta have a quick talk with this guy because of my wife. And even Dornan's like, your wife? And he's like, let's talk in here. Danny goes and talks to Fancy, and he's like, yo, the guy that Diane got is most likely the third man off our shooting. And even Fancy is, like, suspicious. He's like, off a phone tip. And then he looks at it, he's like, you want it? And Danny's like, I'm not going to jump a detective twice in one day. And,
Which is an honorable thing to do.
Yeah, and he's like, I imagine he's just like, I don't even want to deal with it. Like, I don't want to talk to her. Like, I don't even care. I just don't want to have to deal with this anymore today.
I just don't want people to hate me for no reason.
And then he says, he's like, okay, I'll tell Diane to take care of it. And he's like, they're in interview three, wherever the hell that is. And then Fancy's like, did Sipowicz tell you why he was meeting with that sergeant? And he's like, nah, Sipowicz didn't mention anything. I don't know what that's about. And then they cut to the scene inside the interview room, or the coffee room. And it's awkward, and it's a little weird. Sipowicz starts asking about the case. And Dornan remembers it. He's like, yeah, shut outside of a bodega. You got 15 years. And he's like, what do you want to know about it? He's like, keeping the domestic tranquility. He's like, do you remember him giving it up? He's like, yeah, he admitted it. He's like, how do you feel about it? And he's like, seem pretty good. He's like, what's this about? And he's like, well, the DA on that case is my wife. He's like, your wife? When did you get married? And he's like, look, man, I don't have an axe to grind here, dude. I just want to know how you feel about the case. And he's like, I mean, it seemed credible. Like, he had a motive, and he confessed. He's like, yeah, about that confession, did it seem like he gave it up easy? Did it seem credible? And he's like, how would I know that? How would I remember that? He's like, okay, Dornan, what kind of, between you, me, and the doorpost, I think he said, what kind of tune-up did you give this guy? And then Dornan gets really offended. He's like, and he's not offended that he implied that he give tune-ups, or he, in other words, beat suspects. He's offended that he thought he could ask him if he did.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny.
Because he was like, oh, I'm sorry, did we build up some personal trust that I forgot about? It's like, so he definitely did used to do that. He's just upset that this guy thought he would tell him about it.
They thought they were that close, for sure.
He's like, I'm asking you cop to cop. And the guys, and then this part was kind of chilling, at least I thought so. Where he's like, and you being the cop. And then he brings up a story about when he went into a courthouse while Andy was leaving. and Andy laid down a really shitty racist joke on a black panhandler that I'm not going to repeat, but it's not very funny and just kind of racist.
I laughed. Just kidding.
And then Sipowicz is like, how long ago was that? And he's like, and the guy remembered to half a year's, which is pretty accurate. And he goes, six and a half years. So then Sipowicz is like, if I apologize for this thing that happened 6.5 years ago, can you use that memory to give me a straight answer about this? And the guy's like, even if I look bad? And he's like, how would you look bad? It's on information we just got. And he says, it was a credible confession. He's like, that's your public stance. He's like, it's my personal one too. And then they both like kind of just leave it there. And then Dornan's like, we're both on the same job. And then kind of gives him a weird stare and then leaves.
So my question is like, who's, like, does Andy push? I feel like Andy walks out of there pissed off. It's like, Andy, like, if I'm Dornan, I'm annoyed because it's like, who the fuck are you coming out of nowhere asking for all these, you know, answers? And Andy gets frustrated because he doesn't get the answers that he wants. And it's like, you should be lucky that he's even talking to you about this.
Yeah, like, he like came all the way down here.
Like, dude could have just got up a bunch of times and walked away. And been like, I don't answer to you.
And it's also this weird give and take with Dornan, because he obviously cares enough about, like, this kind of idea of fraternity between cops, if you'd call it that, that he showed up to talk to him. Like, yeah. if he knew who this guy was, which I don't know if he knew who Sipowicz was until he saw him, but if he did know who he was, he's like, well, I gotta go talk to him. He's asking me for a favor, you know? Cops gotta look out for their own, we're all on the same job, like, that same song and dance. And then when he gets in there with them, he's like, by the way, I don't trust you, I don't like you, because of something you did. Two things that, like, I thought this at the same time. One, this dude at one point was a detective, and he probably doesn't remember every single one of his cases. So for you to sit there and be like, hey, so do you remember this case? And for him to even know what you're talking about, that's a huge win. Like,
yeah.
That's a huge win. Then for you to be like, okay, so I need some detail on it. Okay, why? My wife's asking. Okay. Because she thinks maybe he was coerced. All right, so I didn't do a good job is what you're saying. He's like, no, you did a good job, but I just want to know how you feel about it. He's like, how I feel about it? It was like years ago. Like, I can't remember everything that I did. And then the reason is just to make your wife feel better. And then, by the way, you're also racist. Like, why do I want to help you and your wife?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's a very odd, weird scene, but I thought it was pretty cool. Pretty cool scene. Bringing up Sipowicz's ongoing issues with race.
Oh, that he's racist? Wait, what?
Yeah, people, the few listeners we have, they say that, some of them say that we hit that point a little too hard. I think that this is just a good example for Sipowicz that even if he's working on it, because I saw something else this week that kind of struck me, that's kind of just some Instagram bullshit philosophy, but someone wrote, like, I think it's an old proverb of some culture that isn't mine, but let me use it. And it was, the axe forgets, but the tree remembers. And just the idea that this dude saw this thing 6.5 years ago, and it was just a sentence. And he lives with that sentence forever from this guy. And then when he brings it up to that guy, he's like, I don't even remember doing that. He's like, yeah, exactly. That's kind of fucked up that you don't even remember doing that. And it wasn't very cool. It wasn't very cool to that guy. It wasn't very cool to me. And it was just a very interesting moment that I think is cool about Andy's character, is even when he seems like he's getting better, he's reminded that he still has things to atone for. And it's good stuff. So after that, it shows Sipowicz going home. And he tries to let Sylvia know, like, hey, I can't get any of that info for you. And she's just kind of like, okay, and starts doing stuff around the house while he's, like, trying to nicely be like, well, you know, he doesn't want to go back on one of his cases. If the guy didn't do this wrong, he probably did something else wrong. He's like, well, and then Sylvia points out, you reopened one of your cases And it was kind of gross, because Sipowicz said, well, I reopened that case because I just started drinking, I felt sentimental, and I didn't want to feel like I gave some guy a bum rap just because of that. It's like, okay, well, Sylvia feels the same way about this guy. Like, kind of put yourself in her shoes. Eventually talks himself into looking into it with her again, but just kind of taking new angles. Almost like they're setting up an arc of the season.
But he does it passive-aggressively, though.
Yeah, he does. And then they set up the other seasonal arc, which is she asks about his new partner, and he says, well, you know, Russell has reservations, and we still have to wait and see, but he's reminding me of Andy Jr. And she's like, well, if he's reminding you of Andy Jr., he doesn't need to be the best. And he looks at her and says, none of that's decided yet. And it was like, yeah, almost like we have several episodes to get that decided. The next scene, they're in... this fucking scene. Fucking Danny is in the bathroom and Russell shows up. And he's like, hey, how's it going with that mutt? And she goes, yeah, he can't spill it fast enough. And says he was out to hit this Julio and a guy named Rincon. And Danny, just asking, goes, oh, what's the first name on that dealer? All she knows is he's asking for the first name. He could be asking because he heard that name before. He worked in narcotics. He could be asking.
He also could be curious.
What's the first name? And she responds with, why am I being graded? And it's like, okay, no, it doesn't matter. And then he's
and you just failed.
and he dries his hands and goes to get his stuff. And she says, oh, it's Julio. He's like, oh, okay. And then he looks at her, he looks around and looks at her, and just to make conversation, you mentioned it earlier in the episode, just to make conversation, he says, when does somebody get a locker in this squad? And she goes, you're going to have to take that up with somebody else. And he's like,
yeah, dude. Yeah.
She's like, you're going to have to take that up with somebody else. He kind of gives her a look like, okay, okay. And he grabs the stuff.
All he wants is to do his job.
And he picks up his stuff, and he goes, good night, Diane. And then he goes to the door, and she's like, good night, Danny. And I, at that point, oh my god, dude, at that point I got so pissed off, because I was like, your husband's name was Bobby. Your husband had a similarly dumb, immature name, and you were blowing that dude to kingdom come. And you worshiped the ground he walked on. And Tommy Richardson used to do the same thing to his name. And now you're doing it to Danny for no reason.
Yeah, dude, she has some issues. She has to figure that out.
Because she says, Danny. And then Danny turns around, he's like, Diane, I'm sorry for your loss. Which is a nice way of saying, Diane, chill the fuck out.
Yeah, like, I know you're feeling something, but like, I'm sorry, but like, calm the fuck down, girl.
Please, calm down. So, and she looks straight at him, and I noticed that, like, the camera wasn't completely focused, it looks like. She was kind of blurry, I don't know why. But she says, you don't know anything about my loss. You don't know anything about him.
Again, shouldn't be back at work. shouldn't be there.
And I feel like if I was in Danny's shoes, just because there's nobody there, there's nobody who can third-party this conversation, I feel like if it was me, I would have turned around and be like, you should go home. You shouldn't be here. Or like you said,
100%.
You should transfer. You shouldn't work here right now. Like, I understand that everybody else is walking on eggshells. It's my first day. I don't even know you. Like, you don't even know me.
Every day you come in here, you're going to see, like, the ghost of your husband. You gotta leave.
And she also says night, like, after that. She's like, yeah, night. And it's like, when it's like, you don't know anything about my loss, you don't know anything about him. I kind of wanted to, if I could respond with, you should go home and watch it, but yeah, you're right. It's also my first day, and I'm gonna keep working here. So, like, you're gonna have to deal with this.
Does he have to do it in, like, pedophile voice?
That's pedophile? I didn't know.
I don't know, it was something.
But yeah, that scene, I was like, especially when she said Danny, I was like, you bitch. Like, the whole time I was like, I was giving her the benefit of the doubt, the first watch. Giving her the benefit of the doubt, letting her say all of her crazy shit. And then when she said that, I, like, literally put brackets and wrote, your husband was named Bobby. Like, the fact that you're like, oh, Danny, immature piece of shit, your husband's name is Robert, and everybody called him Bobby. Like, you have no room. And then the last scene of the episode, I think, is kind of important. It's because it's Danny Sorensen's first episode. He just had one of the worst possible first days, where it turns out you can do nothing right and everybody hates you for no reason.
All for you just trying to do your job.
So he shows up at a bar, one of the only characters that he can get a beer, and we're okay with it. And he gets a beer, and he's like, you want to see my card? Is there anything wrong with the way I ordered? And the guy's like, no.
Yeah, he gets really, really defensive.
And the bartender's like, nah. And he's like, cool. I forgot what the comment was. I didn't write it down. But he's like, oh, I guess it's getting better or something. And then he takes a sip of that beer, and then he kind of puts his head in his hand on the bar, and then it cuts to credits. I'm like, yeah, dude, you get a couple more episodes of this. Like, you get a couple more days of work that are going to suck ass for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, dude.
No logical reason at all. Anything else about this ep that you wanted to talk about?
No.
No.
I have nothing else to talk about. We pretty much hit on Diane being a pain in the ass.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at AstroBrothersPodcast. We're on Twitter at AstroBrosPod, mostly announcing when new episodes are out, but I'll talk to you about the show if you want to chat there. And have yourself a good one. Get vaccinated, you know, so we can possibly get outside eventually.
Yeah, and if you have anything positive to say about Ricky Schroeder, you can go fuck yourself.
Alright. Have a good one, everybody.
Thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to the show, if it has ratings and reviews. It's how people see it in the algorithm. And hopefully, more importantly, check out the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you need NYPD Blue to watch, it is on Hulu right now, but they only have the syndication edits, so any special edition of the episodes, the hour or hour and a half ones, are not there. They're on the DVDs, and they're currently not on Amazon at all. I've been reading that on Reddit, so for some reason it's not there. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons, What Would Sipowicz Do, a collection of articles about the show, and Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. That's on Amazon for, I believe, 99 cents. So there's tons of stuff out there for you. It's important to note that if you're going to continue listening to the episode, there's some spoilers ahead. If you watch the whole series, it's not going to be that big a deal, but if you're following along with us, it is. I know we weren't real spoiler-sensitive before. I apologize. Here's some spoilers for what's coming up.
The intro, I feel like this introduction for Danny isn't... This might be a spoiler.
Uh-huh.
Danny's character arc starts better in the beginning than it, and it end, doesn't end well. Like, yeah. I feel like when he came in, like, there was a bunch... go back to the first time I watched it, there was, like, a bunch of promise. His character's not half bad. How they have him and, like, the choices he's making, like, it's not bad. Like, it's actually different from Bobby, but I feel like it's going to be a good character. And then, like, to see what it ends up being, it's kind of, like, a disappointment.
It's also, like, it made me wonder, because you think of how Bobby Simone left the show. I mean, I guess this is a spoiler. I'll put it at the end of the episode. The way Ricky Schroeder leaves the show makes me think they just, like, were like, fuck this guy. You know what I mean? Like, I think there had to have been something that happened where they were just like, this guy can fucking leave, and I don't care. Because they quite literally just put him in a fucking ditch somewhere.
Yeah, for real.
They literally were just like, hey, what happened to him? I don't know. And then they, like, just wrote something to get him the fuck out of there. So I do think that something must have happened.
I wonder what. That's interesting.
But one thing I did want to mention before we close out that is kind of funny. Because Ricky Schroeder, people would say he's best known probably for Silver Spoons. That's the only thing I know, and I've never seen Silver Spoons. When you go to his known for, it's three movies I've never fucking heard of. But his fourth known for is NYPD Blue, but the photo of NYPD Blue has Bobby Simone on it. So it's like, even in his professional career, it's like, yeah.
That one hurts, yeah.
Like, yeah, but you're not Bobby Simone, though. I imagine Mark Paul Gosselaar's the same situation. I'll double check that.
Yeah, that one hurts, though.
That one hurts, though.